This podcast is general in nature and hasn't taken your circumstances into account. It's important you consider your personal circumstances and speak to a financial advisor before deciding what's right for you. Any general tax information provided is provided as a guide only. Now, here's Shane and Deanna.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Shane.
Hi, Deanna.
Another big week. The Reserve Bank met and kept interest rates unchanged at 4.35% for the fourth consecutive meeting, but there was some concern that we could potentially have gotten a rate hike today. There was a very small chance of one priced in, and even a few economists were forecasting one. I didn't think that the Reserve Bank sounded like they want to raise rates again, although they did discuss it at the board meeting. What did you make of the May statement of monetary policy and the commentary from Michelle Bullock?
Look, I thought it was all fairly sensible. I think raising rates again would have been an overreaction to the March quarter inflation numbers. I think inflation is still falling, as the Reserve Bank said. The trend is still going down. Interest rates are still working to rebalance the economy, that is, bring demand back into line with supply, which ultimately puts downwards pressure on prices. So I think the Reserve Bank was right to leave rates where they were. They did sound a little bit more hawkish. They did revise up their inflation forecast for this year, maybe a little bit too much, I think. But I think the key was that they still see inflation heading back below target next year and going back to the midpoint of the target by mid-2026. And so consequently, given that they still have that confidence and given that they think they've already done enough, I think it made sense to leave rates on hold. But obviously, you know, they didn't consider cutting rates at the last meeting, but they did consider hiking again, and obviously they left rates on hold. So it tells you they've got a bit of a tightening bias, I think, despite the language, which was fairly neutral regarding ruling nothing in or out. But I think the most likely scenario going forward is rates on hold for a longer period than we were initially assuming, up until the most recent CPI. But come later this year, or at least early next year, we will start to see lower interest rates in Australia. And I think one of the other good things was that they appropriately balanced the obvious inflation pressures we're seeing. They are acknowledging that many Australians are doing it tough. I think Michelle Bullock actually used that word, which I think is a word the Treasurer regularly uses in Australia. So at least they acknowledge that. And of course, in the last week, we got some more information on that with more weakness in retail sales. So I was just wondering what you thought of that household spending data.
The retail sales data is pretty shockingly poor, I'd say. I mean, in the last six quarters that we've had, retail volumes have been negative in five of those six quarters. In the March quarter, retail volumes will detract about 0.1 percentage points from GDP growth. So retail accounts for about 30% of overall consumer spending. And most of the other components in consumer spending are essential items. So things like rents, utilities, electricity, transport, purchase of motor vehicles. The only other, I guess, discretionary item is holiday spending and recreation. So the household, I think, is under a lot of downwards pressure, and it's really the main negative in the economy. If you look across the board at other parts that form the economy, I think things are tracking okay, but the household is what's bringing down growth. And the RBA's own forecasts are now pretty low. They're assuming economic growth this year of around 1.3% or 1.5% over 2024. I mean, that's really low if we're usually used to something like 2.75%. And given that our population was running at 2.6% last year, we're still seeing this negative per person economic growth, which is ultimately negative for living standards.
It's interesting to note that the ABS, who collects all these stats, now actually calculates the retail sales numbers on a per capita basis, or reports them. And they're going backwards at a rapid rate of knots in real terms. So strip out the impact of inflation, look at it on a per person or per capita basis. I think retail sales were down something like 3.5% over the last year and down seven quarters in a row of decline. So Australians are doing their bit here. They are cutting back, which ultimately, I guess, is sort of what the Reserve Bank wants, but it is causing a lot of pain out there.
So does that mean that in next week's federal budget, we're likely to see some more cost of living relief? I mean, it's still sort of the buzzword that the government's using. Do we really need to see more cost of living relief at a time when clearly we're still having problems in reducing inflation?
Well, I think it's really a difficult balancing act for the government, this coming budget, because on the one hand, governments like to spend. They don't like to to cut spending because it is not good for their popularity. And, of course, we do have an election coming up sometime by May or a little bit after in 2025. So, yeah, this could turn out to be the last budget before the election, or more likely I think they'll have one more next year. But, yeah, bottom line is the government knows that people are struggling. It knows particularly people in its base are struggling, you know, younger, middle-income people, you know, people with big mortgage. You know, there's a lot of pain out there, and so it wants to provide relief. But I think there's a little bit of scope to do some. I think it makes sense to continue the energy bill subsidies. If they don't, all those people who got them will actually see their energy bill go up rather than down, and that's going to be bad news. But, of course, whatever it does do, because of the underlying inflation problem, whatever it does do, it needs to offset that by savings elsewhere. So I think we're going to see a budget which has, yes, a bit of spending in there, but for the next year or so, they'll probably try and find ways to offset that and, again, come up with another surplus, at least for the current financial year. If you're going out a couple of years down the track and the government wants to spend money on subsidies for Made in Australia policies and those sorts of things, then you could sort of, I'd question the viability of that, but a bit of spending down the track may be okay. But right here, right now, I think it's still a time to focus on inflation and getting that down.
So cost of living relief measures in the budget, Future Made in Australia, which we've spoken about before on this podcast, there doesn't seem to be many other major policy and initiatives in the budget.
Doesn't look that way. I know they've made another announcement about more training for apprentices.
I feel like they always have that.
They always do that. Yeah, that's right. I thought this morning as I was driving into work, I'm thinking, well, we hear this every budget. Yeah, more money on training. But I suppose they do need to do that. If they don't do that, then we're not going to get anywhere near close the 240,000 new dwellings they're committed to build per annum, 1.2 million, over the next 5 years. Right now we're running at a fraction of that, something like 170,000 at best. So you need more workers out there. I think they've also announced a few things on reducing students' HECS debt, reversing some of last year's indexation increase. That doesn't impact the budget, though. It only impacts the net wealth of the government, but it does make students feel a little bit more comfortable because they'll have somewhat lower HECS debt. But it doesn't look like there's going to be a lot in the budget in terms of big spending. Initiatives looks, as you just said, looks like the main focus will be a little bit on cost of living and a focus on Future Made in Australia.
So what do you think are going to be the key highlights in next week's budget?
I think the key highlights are going to be a fairly big budget surplus for this financial year on the back of the massive revenue windfall from higher than expected commodity prices. Next couple of years, though, we're probably going to see a return to deficits because of structural spending in health, defence, aged care, NDIS, higher interest bill, and so on. Those sorts of things will probably get us back into deficit. I think we are going to see some cost of living measures, particularly energy bill relief, continuing for another year, but hopefully offset by spending and saving cuts elsewhere. We're going to see a little bit of spending in some areas, particularly the government's already announced this one in terms of training for apprentices and tradies and so on. In terms of the budget forecasts, I think the government will provide a forecast fairly consistent with what the RBA has already told us. Slower growth this year, picking up a little bit next year, some modest rise in unemployment. Inflation will probably be the big one, staying relatively high this year, but coming down in the subsequent years.
And of course, those tax cuts that start from the 1st of July for middle and high income earners. I think even though it's already been announced policy, they'll probably talk about it again in the budget, and that could be inflationary. Yeah,
I think there's no doubt the government will talk up those tax cuts and remind people. I think if you're on something like $90,000, you'll be getting a tax cut of $1,900. If you're on $100,000, $110,000, you'll be getting a tax cut pushing up towards $1,200.
But over the course of the financial year,
it'll be spread out. Won't be one lump like the old Lamito or Lamington, as some people used to call it, the low and middle income tax offset, where you got up to a $1,000 refund once you fill in your tax return. It'll be spread out through your pay packet. So that will provide an impetus to the economy. That said, you know, these have been talked about for a long time. Presumably they're already factored into Reserve Bank forecasts, government forecasts. But obviously it's one thing the Reserve Bank will want to wait and see. They'll want to wait and see how much extra money the government puts into the economy and the budget. Obviously, they don't want to see too much extra money going in. The timing of that, if it's a few years down the track, maybe okay. If it's all now, then that'd be a big concern. They'll also want to see the impact of those tax cuts on spending. And I suspect that they don't provide a huge boost, but they will provide a little bit of relief, but not enough to soup the economy up again.
Now, we always talk about the federal budget, but the state budgets are also important. They come out over the course of the next 2 months. We already had the Victorian budget this week, and we have to keep those in mind as well when we're thinking about the overall impact of fiscal stimulus to the economy. Once you add in the impact from the states, I'd actually say that fiscal policy is adding to growth, or it's stimulatory for the economy. So that's something to watch as well.
I think it is. On another matter, I'm just wondering what you made of the latest Taylor Swift album.
Well, I really liked the first half of it. The second half was a bit down and weary, but the first few songs are really catchy.
I must admit, when I drifted into the, you know when you play Spotify in the car, so you're just driving along, you're drifting into all these songs, and then you get to the second half, the anthology version, and I think these are all pretty dull. And then I got to go back to the first half, which is a bit better. But I'm still, what happened to songs like Style and Me? And You Need to Calm Down. I'm still waiting for a return to those boppy songs. We've now gone through four albums, and it's rather dull sort of stuff.
Maybe she'll get there.
Maybe. I hope so. I read The Economist this week, and they had a review of her latest album. They're claiming that she's peaked, which I hate to think.
Yeah, but The Economist is always a bit, like, whenever they say that something's at the bottom or at the peak, I think it's a reverse indicator. You actually had a slide on that in your presentations about The Economist cover magazines being a reverse indicator.
Yeah, well, she didn't make it to the cover, but that is true. The most famous one, they have this beautiful picture of Christ the Redeemer taking off from the mountain in Rio, and the headline was Brazil Takes Off. This was about 2009. Just at the time when Brazil's about to tank and go through a really rough ride. So, yeah, you've got to be a little bit careful about The Economist.
But not all economists are like that.
No. but I think economists are sort of like to be somewhat contrarian. But The Economist magazine doesn't realise that it's been contrarian with its headlines, unless it's playing a joke on us or something. The old magazine indicator says when something makes the cover of a magazine, that's usually time to do something else. Mm. And the classic was the Business Week cover of, I think it was 1979, and the cover story was why people will never invest in shares again. And, of course, somebody bought shares in 1979. I know it's a long time ago, but somebody bought shares again back in 1979 and held on to them for the next few decades would have done spectacularly well because it was at the tail end of the malaise of the 1970s. So that's, I think, where the famous magazine cover indicator came from.
I thought that when I saw the signs for Bitcoin a few months ago on the side of every bus stop, you know, it's time to invest in Bitcoin. Yeah. I kind of thought, well, this is actually probably the worst time to invest if it's everywhere and everyone's piling in on it.
It was also on my Twitter feed, ads constantly for Bitcoin. Lately, I haven't seen as much, even though Bitcoin's gone back up again.
Well, that's it for this week. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Shane.
Thanks, Deanna. Take care.
For more info on Shane and Deanna's podcasts and reports, head to the Insights Hub at amp.com.au.